marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hear the people singing bread and roses. Good afternoon and welcome.
As we come marching,
we are marching on
so many women
for social justice
we cry
on the Bread and Roses Show, economic justice, a fair economy, on a Friday afternoon. And Bread and Roses now rebroadcast on Mondays at 11 in the heat of summer. Torrid temperatures in the south and in Washington, D.C. As the budget talks have heated up. We will be talking about today on the Bread and Roses Show the People's Budget. The People's Budget. That's right. A budget for the rest of us. And I want to just let you know about the Bread and Roses Show on WXOJ LP. That's low power. Northampton 103.3 FM and streaming live on valleyfreeradio.org. Also, if you want to hear any of or some of our prior broadcasts, you can download or listen on the Bread and Roses blog, which is called Bread and Roses Radio. WordPress.com. Bread and Roses Radio. WordPress.com. My name is Elliot Terry. I'm your host for this edition of the Bread and Roses Show. Today we will be talking about the People's Budget, as it is called, the bill that has been proposed by the Congressional Progressive Caucus as an alternative, as a document to point the way towards solvency in the American economy and towards a fair economy, which is one of the topics that we like to discuss here. My guest today to discuss this will be Marty Nathan, physician and social activist. But first, before we get to the People's Budget, I'd like to take care of a little business of public service announcements. Just a little announcement for Valley Free Radio that there have been some schedule changes because Valley Free Radio is now offering Al Jazeera English daily at 9 a.m. That's right. You can't find that anywhere in the Pioneer Valley, but right here, Al Jazeera English daily at 9 a.m. That's because Valley Free Radio is a Pacifica Network affiliate, and we were able to bring that to you. But because we're bringing that at 9 a.m., some schedule changes. Twilight Poetry Pub will be moving to Tuesday at 8 p.m., and Seeing Red Radio with Tony Down will be on Tuesday at 9 p.m. So Seeing Red Radio at 9 p.m. Tuesday, and Twilight Poetry Pub at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, because making room for Al Jazeera English daily at 9 a.m. And a public service announcement from Northampton Committee to Stop the War Friday film series. This Friday, July 22nd, the film Freedom Riders. In 1961, segregation seemed to have an overwhelming grip on American society. Many states violently enforced the policy. The story behind a courageous band of civil rights activists called Freedom Riders, who in 1961 challenged segregation in the American South. That film and discussion Friday, the Francis Crowe Community Room at the Media Education Foundation, 60 Masonic Street, Northampton. Admission is free, and the room is accessible to everyone. 350.org, Moving Planet, organizing meeting will be First Congregational Church, 165 Main Street, Amherst, Tuesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. It's Tuesday, July 26th, 7 p.m., 350.org, Moving Planet Organizing Meeting. 350.org is building an international movement to demand action from world leaders to address the climate crisis. Their two-pronged approach includes action to undercut the climate-dying power of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Moving Planet, an international day of action this September 24th, is the second prong. All right, that takes care of some PSAs for today. Now, the People's Budget. I'd just like to play a little audio clip of one of the co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus speaking about the People's Budget.
You know, the People's Budget is about offense. The People's Budget is that we have an agenda, too. We're going to preserve the things that are important to the American people, and we are going to get revenue from the things that are exploiting the American people. Simple as that, not a very complicated equation, and guess what? We create a surplus and reduce the deficit by 2021. We begin to bring down the national debt to 64% by that same year that no other budget, including Ryan's budget, even approaches. The Van Hollen budget, which is the Democratic budget, doesn't even approach that. And why did we do that kind of aggressive look at the budget? Because the American people want things dealt with, but at the same time, they want things taken care of. And they want to balance it. So the subsidies, the taxes for the biggest 2% rich, the corporate loopholes, military spending. For the first time in three decades, the American people are saying, not by a huge majority, but enough of a majority, to say, look at military spending.
That was Arizona Congressman Grijalda. Arizona Congressman Grijalda is co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and a sponsor of the so-called People's Budget. He was speaking there with Pennsylvania talk show host Rick Smith back in April, as the now August 2nd deadline looms to raise the debt ceiling to avoid a government default and an unimaginable economic nightmare. Unimaginable economic nightmare. Wait a minute. Haven't we seen this movie before? A deadline approaches. All the talking heads in the echo chamber keep ramping up the fear factor. The president stands firm on democratic principles. At first, then, in the 11th hour, he jumps into a phone booth at GOP headquarters and turns into the conciliator, President Republicrat, caver-in-chief, caving in on important issues to the American people. Don't you love the drama? The Republican leadership. Oh, let me back up a bit. For any expats that have just returned to the new U.S. of A, the Republicans swept into office, as we all know, taking a huge majority in the House of Representatives with an intention of rolling back all social programs and making the rich people richer so that those same Republican majority just passed a budget bill that does just that. They tagged it the Cut, Cap, and Balance Act. The cuts are to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Pell Grants, etc., etc. So the budget drama is set against the backdrop of a government default, and the Republicans are using it to press Obama. Well, at least that's the kabuki theater aspect. In reality, I believe President Obama and the Republicans are part of an economic school of capitalism that uses crisis as a means of achieving policy changes. In this case, worldwide, the corporate elite have determined that there shall be austerity measures leading to the dismantling of not only the social service safety nets around the world, but the entire middle class. And that includes the United States. But wait, there's a viable alternative being ignored and elbowed over in the corner. It's the People's Budget. The People's Budget is a serious budget bill. That is, it's a real piece of legislation that was introduced by the Congressional Progressive Caucus early in the spring. The People's Budget Bill claims it will cut $5.6 trillion dollars over 10 years, saving the U.S. $856 billion in interest payments, with spending cuts totaling $1.7 trillion and a $30 billion surplus by 2021. What's not to love? Closer to home, this past June, the state Democratic Convention unanimously approved support for the people's budget and directed the Massachusetts congressional delegation to do so as well. One of the authors of that resolution at the state convention, working with the Progressive Democrats of America, is with us today to talk about the people's budget, Dr. Marty Nathan. Marty Nathan is a physician, an anti-war and social justice activist with the Alliance for Peace and Justice and the Progressive Democrats of America, one of the conveners of the statewide network Fund Our Communities, Not War, a mother of three now grown children, and co-founder of the Markham Nathan Fund. Marty, welcome to the Bread and Roses Show.
Thank you so much, Elliot. It's great to be here.
It's good to see you. You know, before we get into the budget, I just realized that I read a PSA for a movie that may have impacted you quite a bit. Personally, am I wrong? The Freedom Riders, were you involved in the Freedom Rider campaign way back?
I actually wasn't. I was in the South from 1973 to 89 in North Carolina, and that was after the Freedom Rides were over. And so those were the people that I looked to.
Okay.
I was as my heroes, but I was involved in union organizing and anti-racist work, anti-Ku Klux Klan work in during the 1970s.
Wow, still a tough time.
Mm-hmm, it was.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We are, as I said, Marty, you're one of the authors, I believe, of the PDA-sponsored resolution at the state convention for the people's budget, as well as several other resolutions that passed unanimously. Tell us about the effort to get the state convention to acknowledge support and the legislators to acknowledge support for the people's budget.
It was surprisingly easy to get this passed. It was not completely unanimous, the vote, but it was nearly. And once we were able to put it on the agenda, people loved it. We had very little time to do any politicking beforehand, but people knew about the budget. And if they didn't know, the outline of the budget was so welcome to people who are, most of the Democratic organizers in communities across the state are good folks who are concerned about poor people, about labor unions, about peace, about the kinds of things that you on this program talk about all the time. And they really are, there's a big leap between them and the national leadership, which does its thing in Washington. And those were the people that we wanted to reach out to. And those were the people that glommed onto this resolution to support the people's budget and passed it vigorously and quickly and without discussion. It was what they wanted. And I think that reflects a yearning, not just in Massachusetts among Democrats, but a yearning by a lot of people, the polls say, to cut the military budget, to get out of the wars, to fund the things that we need, and to create jobs, and to tax the rich. And that's what the people's budget does. It is the common sense alternative to the gobbledygook that pushes our nation's prizes, that collects them and gives them to the rich and destroys them in overseas wars.
All right. I was really surprised. I was at that convention. I was really surprised at the support. It was an eye-opener. But let's talk some about the key provisions of the people's budget. I'll admit I haven't read the actual budget, just the Progressive Caucus literature, the executive statement, I guess they call it. But the hallmark of the bill is that it cuts military spending, it ends the wars, redirects funds to create jobs, and does so by closing corporate tax loopholes and raising taxes on the wealthy. It sounds like a progressive dream act. Let's take those one at a time. What kind of military cuts are we talking about, Marty?
Well, according to the people's budget, we are talking about spending cuts of $869 billion. The next 10 years. And we, as many people know who live in the Northampton area or the Amherst area, we, as a huge portion, as a very significant portion of our tax burden, are paying for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and Pakistan, and now Libya as well. When we passed the resolution to bring our war dollars home in Northampton, we had found from checking the National Priorities Project website that we had paid in Northampton $114 million over the almost 10 years at that point since the beginning of the Afghani war. That is sizable. That could have been used to fill the potholes, pay the teachers, and that has become a bigger and bigger issue now with what's going on in the Northampton schools, and create many jobs, pay for medical care, the expansion of medical care, the things that we actually need in our communities. That we had no idea that the people's budget was in the offing. And when we turned around after finishing that work with the Bring Our War Dollars Home, we looked to see what on the national level could possibly reflect the effort to fight for bringing war dollars back into our community. And what we saw was the people's budget. Besides that, though, it also cuts military spending, closes bases overseas, gets rid of useless and harmful projects by the Pentagon, and saves the trillions that many people who have been watching our federal government for years say have to happen in order for us to be on a sound financial as well as moral footing.
Now, of course, any cuts in military seem to be associated with lack of security. How do we combat that charge?
We spend more on our military than the whole rest of the world combined. And no one who is speaking honestly truly believes that we need the kind of warfare that we are spending. And most people who are sensible, who really listen to what the rest of the world is saying about us, know that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are not making us more secure. And the people's budget addresses this directly, that this actually, these cuts in budget, by making our economy more sound and getting us out of provocative wars in the Middle East and terribly destructive wars in the Middle East will actually make us safer.
There's some details here that I'll just read from the congressional budget, Progressive Caucus. They proposed to reduce the base discretionary defense spending, which they call realistic reduction in defense spending on conventional and strategic forces and capabilities that would not compromise our national security interests or capabilities. Savings would accrue from decreasing routine deployment of U.S. troops overseas, ignoring overseas contingency operations, of course, they say, slowing the growth of the Army and Marine Corps as the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wind down, reducing the fleet size of the U.S. Navy, reducing the number of Air Force squadrons, reducing the strategic capabilities, and canceling outdated Cold War weapon systems, including variations of the F-35 MV-22 Osprey, which is controversial, the Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle, as well, among other savings. And they have in bold letters that this proposal does not touch TRICARE, which I have no idea what that is. but that's supposed to make somebody feel good, I guess. So that's some of the details of the military spending cuts. And let's see now. What about
bringing the troops home alone would reduce the budget by $1.6 trillion over the next 10 years relative to the planned baseline if these wars, as they seem to be doing, continue to go on and on and on despite the public posture that the war in Iraq is now over. In fact, our spending there continues, and we will be spending $1.6 trillion over the next 10 years. Think about that. How much daycare you could get out of that. How many public transport lines we could get, how many railroads, how many green jobs, you have to do some creative thinking about transformation of the economy, but that's what we are talking about with this people's budget.
And I think with the death of Osama bin Laden, a lot of people are thinking about that, as well as jobs. Now, what about job creation? Where is the focus in this bill on what kind of jobs?
Well, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. I know that
they're talking about increasing aid to education, and instead of the huge cuts that we see now. I mean, Wisconsin was over cuts to education. The Battle of Madison was over cuts to education, and we will be seeing a battle over education in Massachusetts in the coming years. Increasing funding for education, transportation, rebuilding our highways and waterways. Our infrastructure is falling apart.
It says here they plan an infrastructure bank, which is a great plan. I really support and would push for a Massachusetts version of some sort of a state bank. That's a great idea. And it also, I think it says here, they would be really investing $1.5 trillion in job creation, education, clean energy, and broadband infrastructure. So broadband and R&D. So basically, the savings from the military would go right into rebuilding America. Is what they're planning.
Yes, plus the increased taxes on the rich. The next area that they focus on is energy independence, and I think that that can be slippery sometimes when you're talking about instead building nuclear. But in fact, what this bill specifically does is it talks about ending the subsidies to nuclear and instead investing in real green energy, which is a refreshing change from a lot of the shell games that are going on around energy independence in Washington, D.C. It's very refreshing. And finally, building houses for poor people. I mean, not just building, but rehabbing all the one and developing for occupancy all the houses that have been lost to the people who, during the past economic crisis, during the foreclosure, people are out on the streets or living with brothers and sisters, parents, etc. We need housing of many different forms. And this is a problem that must be attacked because it's a national crisis because of the foreclosure problem.
Well, you talked about a fair tax. What are we talking about in terms of taxes? I know that they mentioned in the bill Jan Schakowsky's increase of tax rates on the rich from highs to highs of 48% and 49% would be the top, a millionaire's tax. What else? What else are we talking about when we talk about the tax restructuring?
First, I want to interject something that made me terribly depressed this morning. I was reading about the Gang of Six proposal that in the last 20 years, there has been a huge shift of America's wealth from the poor to the rich, and a huge shift in the burden of funding our public need from the wealthy to the poor and working people. Part of that, a huge part of that, was the Bush tax cuts. What this talks about, let's go back. This new proposal by the Gang of Six wants to decrease the upper level of taxation on the very richest Americans from 35% to between 26 and 29%. That is absolutely the wrong way to go. And what the People's Budget offers instead is to allow the Bush-era tax cuts to expire at the end of the coming year, to get rid of the upper income tax cuts in the tax deal, I'm going to let you deal with a Schakowsky because I really don't understand that. I'm only a doctor. I'm not an economist.
<You know. laughs>
To develop a progressive estate tax rather than getting rid of the estate tax that the Republicans like to talk about as the death tax, and to actually tax capital gains and qualified dividends as ordinary income. They are taxed at a much lower rate. This is income by generally very rich people. And it's income that has not, many people believe, been earned. It is through investment only, not by the sweat of one's brow. And so this proposal would make that unearned income be taxed at the same level as yours and my earned income.
Well, not only that, they say that they would be taxing U.S. corporate foreign income as it is earned, which it is not now, and eliminating corporate welfare for oil, gas, and coal companies.
Thank you.
And enacting a financial crisis responsibility fee. Accountability for the financial crisis.
Isn't that something?
Excellent idea. Excellent idea.
I mean, we should throw them in jail, but at least we can try to get some of that money back to our society from whom it was robbed.
Well, let's get some clarification. The Gang of Six are Democrats and Republicans, Republicrats that are trying to cut, come up with some sort of compromise bill, as they usually do.
They are Democrats and Republicans, not the same kind of Democrats that passed the People's Budget at the last convention.
Well, it's interesting that people complained before Obama was elected. The cry was that people in the Democratic Party, the loyal Democrats, were sick of the Republicrat image. And everyone was sick of it. They're always sick of it. Even on the independents and the right, they want a real Republican, if they're a Republican, and they don't want to. And he was supposed to represent that change, and we got him back. The Republicrats are back. They seem to just never die. But they are the compromise. But then there's the cut, cap, and what is it? Cap
and balance. Slash and burn.
Yeah, slash and burn. That's the Republican proposal.
That's the Paul Ryan. No, I'm sorry. No, it was the most recent one.
That's right. The most recent one. Okay. So that plan, the cut, cap, and balanced, got a heated response, immediate response from Raul Grijalva and Keith Ellison, the co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And I just want to read a little bit of what they had to say about that program. They say they accused the Republicans of walking away from every negotiation from the deficit commission to the Biden commission to direct talks with the president. And they said the Republicans have made it clear that they place politics above responsibility solving the country's budget challenges. Now they've introduced this cut, cap, and balance proposal. The bill would dramatically cut our country's most critical investments, including Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. It would also cut funding for public education, Pell Grants, repairing roads, bridges, and waterways, and disaster relief. The Republicans have made their values abundantly clear. The Cut, Cap, and Balance Act would essentially make it unconstitutional to care for our seniors, our veterans, and our children. And as Jacob Liu, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, said, what these amendments do is not just say you have to balance the budget, but it puts in place spending limitations that would force cuts in Social Security and Medicare more deeply even than the House resolution. On top of that, Congressional Progressive Caucus stands by the people's budget, the only budget that actually creates a surplus by 2021. That's from the statement that was just issued about these cuts, which are they're just going for it as much as they can, so taking us back to the golden era of the Robert Barons as quickly as possible. Well, let's listen to Raul Grijalva again talking about the support for this people's budget.
People might make that a pittance, but it's not a pittance. It's 40% of our caucus. And what we believe now, as it begins to continue to pick up traction, and the people's budget becomes more realistic, more objective, and solving the problem kind of a budget, that we get to get we get to put pressure on the Senate, and we get to put pressure on the administration to hold the line on the vetoes that were promised.
I cut off the beginning of that. He's talking about 77 votes in the Progressive Caucus that supported the people's budget, and he's talking about growing that number. And locally, Marty, you were recently in a meeting with Congressman Richie Neal. He's the ranking opposition member in the Ways and Means Committee, and you were pressing him to become a co-sponsor to the People's Budget. What was his response, and how is that effort going?
It was a gratifying meeting. I think that he expressed his support of all the points of the People's Budget, and I think he is considering doing that. He needs to be pushed. We ask that everybody listening to this call today, 202-224-3121, which is Capitol Hill, and ask for Congressman Neal's office, and ask him please to sign on to the People's Budget. I think that he has, throughout his history, voted in ways, particularly about 2 weeks ago, exactly 2 weeks ago, he voted against the military appropriations bill after signing on to supporting the Lee-Nadler amendment, both of which, one would have promoted getting out, the amendment would have promoted getting out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he voted against the defense appropriations budget because it continued supporting those two wars. And he told us, this was a really good discussion, he told us the reason he knew he had to vote that way was because on that Friday morning, 2 weeks ago, he opened up the newspaper and read that President Obama had said publicly that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid were on the table during the deficit reduction talks. That horrified him because Social Security and Medicare are funded separately. They are not a part of the general budget. They pay for themselves and should not be used to balance any budget. And he has fought in order to maintain them. And Medicaid is that which gives health to poor people. I use it every day. He said, here he is offering those on the table at the same time, giving us this bloated, warmongering defense appropriations budget without thinking, without offering to cut that, to get out of Afghanistan and Iraq, to get rid of those billions, trillions, actually, of dollars that we are spending on harmful, horrible wars, and use it instead. We can balance that budget, the Congressional Progressive Caucus says, but also fund people's needs in this country and keep intact Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He was furious. He voted against the defense appropriation, and he was one of, I think it was in the 80s, number of people who voted against him. And we are very proud to have him for that reason in our district. But he needs the support of his constituents. 202-224-3121. Call, tell him to support the people's budget.
Sounds like a road to Damascus moment, perhaps. I want to take a break here and come back to this and maybe talk a little bit more, give a little background, because this is a very important moment in the relationship with Congressman Richie Neal. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about that meeting, but just want to remind listeners that they are listening to the Bread and Roses show. And my name is Elliot Terry. I'm here talking with Dr. Marty Nathan about the People's Budget. We're going to be talking about that and the meeting with Richie Neal about the People's Budget and a few other items when we come back. Right now, I'd like to just take a little musical interlude.
Dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody's got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody's talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long-stemmed rose. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. And everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows, everybody knows, that's how it goes. And everybody knows, everybody knows, that's how it goes.
let you live forever. Oh, and you've done a lot or two, and everybody knows the deal is rotten. Oh, Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows.
And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. And everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through, from the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. And everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows.
Everybody knows. How cynical. You know, it was Lily Tomlin that said during the Bush era, no matter how cynical I get, I just can't keep up. It's pretty bad out there. And that was Don Henley doing a Leonard Cohen song, Everybody Knows, in a tribute album to Leonard Cohen. And my name is Elliot Terry. This is the Bread and Roses Show. I'm here talking with Marty Nathan about the People's Budget. And we were just talking about a meeting that Marty, you had with Representative Richie Neal, that was put together by Northampton Mayor Claire Higgins.
This was the second meeting, and she had been very forceful in urging the city council to pass the War Dollars resolution. She didn't have a vote in that, but she was one of the original mayors for peace in the state of Massachusetts, and she was one of the first to sign on to the Bring Our War Dollars Home resolution. And she knew that we, the anti-war community, had been trying to get a meeting with Congressman Neal. And the PDA had been meeting personally with Congressman Neal and had been doing monthly brown bag vigils outside his office for many months. And so he was getting pressure from many different sources. And it was not ever that on this particular issue he was not aware and sensitive to the need to stop the wars. But he was, for a long time, not so willing to meet with us, and Mayor Claire Higgins was the one that made it click.
Kudos, Mayor Claire. And the background to that is that, as you said, there have been going on for several years attempts to move Congressman Neal to on these issues, on particularly on the war. And let's hope that was a Damascus moment, seeing the seeing his president that he had supported selling out. We got a bunch of other issues that I want to talk to you about, but I want to just play one more thing about the People's Budget before we move on. Let's see if I can get this Raul Gajalda quote again.
You know, the People's Budget is about offense. The People's Budget is that we have an agenda, too. We're going to preserve the things that are important to the American people, and we are going to get revenue from the things that are exploiting the American.
All right, that was part of that. That was that's the important part of that clip that I played earlier for me. That so the people's budget is about offense. That we have an agenda too. And his coach Aaron, Raul Grijalda and Keith Ellison have been on the talk shows with high visibility. And Marty, does this budget have legs? Do you think this is going to get some major support over the next year, 2 years, 3 years?
I think that all depends on us. It's very simple. They have all the money. They have all the lobbyists. They have, and by they, I mean the big corporations, the defense industry, the richest people in this country. They have everything they need to keep things the way they are and make them worse, put the governing cost of governing on the backs of poor and working people while they reap the profits. And that's what this is all about. I just wanted to read something here. Budgets are more than collections of numbers. They are a statement of our values. The Congressional Progressive Caucus budget is a reflection of the values and priorities of working families in this country. Whereas the budgets that are other budgets that are now before Congress are the budgets of the very rich and the defense industry. I think that we will only, as always, as history has always shown us, get change in a progressive direction if we mobilize people. If those people put pressure on their congressmen and senators, and I mean, when you call 202-224-3121, also speak to Senator Terry and Senator Brown. I say this with a smile. Nonetheless, we must do this, and we must caucus, organize with all the people that represent and are the ones that are being thrown out on the street as houses are foreclosed, are dropping out of high school as schools are starved to death, those who care about the environment and see it starved to death. We need to make a major coalition. This is crisis time. How did Leonard Cohen say it in his song? He was talking about crisis. This is it, guys. And we have to get together and start demonstrating. Join those brown bag vigils out in front of Kerry's and Neil's office. You know better than I do, Elliot, what days they are. They're on Wednesday at noon.
I think it's the third Wednesday.
Third Wednesday. Call these people, but let's get together. This Saturday in Worcester at 12:30 at the Friends meeting, we're going to have a statewide coalition meeting of the Fund Our Communities, Not War. And this is what we're one of the things we're focusing on is the people's budget.
Okay.
And trying to get town meetings in every single congressional district in Massachusetts and become a model for the rest of the country. We are the ones that must take the offensive. They have the money. We have the people. And every poll after poll says that. And by we, I mean those who support peace and social justice.
Let me give a little background on that that meeting and what led up to, as you said before, you are co-convener of the Fund Our Communities effort, and you also were one of the prime movers locally of the Bring the War Dollars Home campaign, which gained the support of the Northampton City Council and Amherst Town Meeting, and recently the National Council of Mayors passed a resolution calling for a redirection of the funding from war to community needs. That's something that the mayors have not done since the Vietnam era. And now this Saturday, there's the meeting of Fund Our Communities, Not War campaign. How is that related to the Bring the War Dollars Home? Is it the same thing? Where are we going to be moving with that?
It's a broadening of it. It focuses... Bring Our War Dollars Home said, stop the wars, bring the troops home, bring the money to our communities. This coalition extends that to also include the people who have been working for decades to cut the military budget, all those fighters whose letters and numbers I can never remember that don't do anything except pollute the atmosphere and drop bombs on civilians. Getting rid of those and demilitarizing the economy. And the third portion of this is getting together the people who are suffering now in the face of the cuts and the economic crisis, who need that demilitarizing of the economy so that they can have jobs and a decent meal and a house, a roof over their heads. We need to get those folks together, and that was the purpose of Fund Our Communities, Not War. It is broader than bring our war dollars home. And it really, when we looked around to see what is the vehicle for making our case, we said, Raul Gahava and Keith Ellison and the Congressional Progressive Caucus have put together this this people's budget. And that expresses pretty darn well what we think needs to happen with our country if we are going to survive.
You know, there's another event happening Saturday. Politically, there is a gathering, a schmoozing session and fundraiser for the Democratic state.
I'll be there.
You'll be there, too.
Yes. It's going to be a big day. We really recommend people go to both. Come on down to Worcester. And then, you know, travel on over to East Hampton.
And
schmooze.
And schmooze.
And lay out what we talked about in the hours before.
Well, that's the point. Can you at an event like that?
We did, actually. I went to a fundraiser, and I actually met Tim Carpenter and some of the PDA folks. I'm a member of PDA. There, it just so happened. And I put the people's budget in Richard Neal's hands at that point and said, hey, we got to get together and talk this over. So, yeah, I think that our Congress people, our politicians are people, and so they respond to our speaking to them, but they more than that respond to many people speaking to them, which is the issue of community organizing, letting people know what seems to be in their best interest, letting them decide and giving them a voice.
I was told that at that meeting, you can corroborate this, you know, Congressman Neal's style is low-key and never to really go out front and sponsor something. Is it true, this anecdote, that Mayor Claire Higgins leaned over and gave him a look and said, Richie, you got to go get behind this. Did she do that? Is that
she
just
may have.
Lore?
I wouldn't doubt it, because she is a strong force and an ethical force in politics. I know at times I pick fights with her, but she fights for social justice.
All right, here's the big question, and one of the questions of the hour. If President Obama makes a deal with the Republicans to cut Social Security benefits, Medicaid and Medicare, what do you think his chances are of getting reelected?
Let me speak to that, because that came up in this meeting. We had several labor people and community organizers from Springfield, from North End Outreach Network, from two of the local unions. And one of the union guys said, if he goes this direction, he is going to lose his base, he being President Obama. My union people will not come out to vote. And even if I felt like encouraging them to do that, I'm not sure they'd listen to me. And Congressman Neal said at that point he thought a big mistake was being made on the part of the National Democratic Party by going this direction, the shock doctrine direction, that the National Democratic Party is always concerned about the independent voters who are totally unreliable. And they have dumped over the side of the ship the people that keep the ship moving by taking this economic and defense direction. So who knows? Perhaps this can be retrieved. But I know many, many progressives are wondering what they're going to do in about a year and 3-4 months.
I know that the pressure and the spin has already begun among Democratic officials telling progressives, oh, well, you know, what's the alternative? And of course, you're going to vote for him. And of course, you know, it's already started. But this seems like a Waterloo moment.
It is foolishness. The reason Barack Obama won in a landslide 3 years ago was because people who are going to be progressive, black, Latino, and poor, saw him as their voice. They wouldn't have voted, but they not only voted, they actively organized for him because he encapsulated, they thought, their hope and their dream. I don't see that happening this time around.
Okay. On that note, this has been the Bread and Roses Show for Friday, July 22nd. Talking about the People's Budget with Marty Nathan. I'm your host, Elliot Terry, wishing you a wonderful summer. See you next month. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! If it's Friday when you're listening, be well.
All touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. As we come marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.